Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We are going to turn our attention to food and talk about a great book that's out there for you and me. The book is called One Pot Wonders, and the author is our guest, Clifford Wright. He's the author, as a matter of fact, of 14 cookbooks, including his latest three, One Pot Wonders, Hot and Cheesy, and The Best Soups in the World. His articles on food and cuisine have appeared in Gourmet and Bon Appetit and Food and Wine and other magazines. He was the winner of the James Beard KitchenAid Cookbook of the Year 2000 and winner of the Beard Award for the Best Writing on Food. And it's great to have him with us today to talk about One Pot Wonders. One Pot. Do you have a favorite One Pot recipe? Love to hear about it. Maybe you have a particular ingredient that you'd like to have make the star of a One Pot Wonder. And certainly we'd love to have hear about that as well. And let's talk about that with our guest today. And he's with us, I believe. Got him there? Cliff, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Well, I'm really enjoying going through your book. Let's talk about some of the basics first. What's your definition of a one-pot wonder?
Well, it's actually twofold. You know, there's a lot of books out there called one-pot stews or one-pot cooking. And what they mean often is at the end of the cooking process, everything gets served from one pot. But you may have used more than one pot to prepare things. You may have fried something or done something else and so forth. So the idea behind this book is that from beginning to end, you are only using one, and it really isn't just a pot, it's one vessel. And that vessel could be a stew pot or a soup pot or a wok or a skillet. The point being that it's only one thing you end up cleaning at the end of the day. So that's the first part of a one-pot wonder. The second part is the wonder part, that this stuff has got to taste great. And so this book represents pretty much the favorite things that I cook, and some of my recipe testing eaters are my children, who are adult children and eat very well. So it came out to be a kind of exciting book. At the time that I was writing it, my youngest son had moved back in with me after he graduated from college, and his job was cleanup. And he started saying, when I was writing this book, "This is great. I only have one thing to wash."
And I'm telling you, I have not yet had a chance to try some of your recipes, but you sent us, by the way, I should just mention our listeners, we have three recipes that Clifford sent us from his book: wine braised beef short ribs with mushrooms, which sounds wonderful, black bean and spinach burritos. And what was the third one? The third one was a turkey vindaloo?
Yep.
Oh, man. So those are up on our Facebook page. So just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you'll get an idea of the kinds of things you're going to find when you get a copy or take a look at the copy of Clifford Wright's One Pot Wonders book. They're right there. And if you want to join in, by the way, and have some questions of your own, I hope you'll reach us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. Well, I like the idea. When I cook, my wife has always been a lot more efficient than me, and so when I cook, there's usually a pile of pots and pans. So I'm really looking forward to giving this a try.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that because it was my son who pointed out that sometimes he would say, you know, after dinner, wow, you used a lot of pots this time. And I, of course, wasn't paying attention because I wasn't cleaning up. So, although before he moved back in with me, I was cleaning up. So I was paying a lot of attention to that because the cleanup is something that you don't really want to get too much involved in. That's not the fun part of cooking, but it's one of the necessary parts. So I thought a one-pot approach or one-vessel approach, not a very sexy name, that's why I call it One-Pot Wonders, would be not only welcome in terms of the food being presented, but just welcome in terms of whoever is cleaning up at the end of the day.
Well, how hard is it to create a dish that is really, truly a one-pot meal?
Well, interestingly, you think, oh, this will be easy. It's not easy at all because there's a lot of things you have to do sometimes to prepare a dish for its final serving. So, for instance, let's say I have a cast iron skillet and I want to do some kind of steak and potatoes with fried onions. Well, I can't just throw it all in and cook it. It has to be cooked in stages. But then I realize there's nothing that says it's against the rules to cook something in that one skillet, take it out, put something else in, take it out, put something else in, take it out, and at the end, mix everything back in together. So that is allowed, and of course I make the rules here, that is allowed, and it keeps to the theme of a one pot. You don't use more than one pot. But being inventive that way was a little bit difficult, and partly because, you know, I wanted to use a variety of different vessels, not just a stew pot. That's easy. You just throw everything in a stew pot. But, for instance, how do you make a dinner, a full dinner for four people in a wok? So you got to think about. And that was fun.
Yeah. And of course, you use woks and the skillets and the griddles. You do it on a griddle. Deep
right.
fried.
In the beginning of the book, I've got basically a sort of a two-page illustration of all the cooking implements used in one-pot cooking for one-pot wonders. So a baking casserole, a flame-proof baking casserole, a cast-iron skillet, a fryer pot, a griddle, earthenware casserole, grills, large pots, fish posters, nonstick skillets, soup pots, paella pans, a tagine, a wok, a salad bowl for the things that aren't cooked, a saucepan. So it's all one thing. That's all. And no recipe calls for two pots.
Clifford Wright, our guest today, talking with him about One Pot Wonders. That's the title of his latest cookbook. Chance for you and I to do a little cooking and do it in one pot. And he's got all the directions and some great recipes to share with us. Give us a call with your cooking question, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. I would love to hear from you. So this, you talk, the notion of flavor layering is what you were describing a little earlier, wasn't it, Clifford?
Yes, and that's an important part of cooking in general. This business of understanding what your ingredients do and then understanding what your ingredients do with each other. What kind of dance do you create? What kind of orchestra do you lead? I'll give you a little story that will give you an idea of this. One of my sons said to me once, he was on his own, about cooking. He said, well, I don't have any spices. And I said, you know, cooking isn't about spices. It could be very, very simple. The idea is less is more. So an example is the one you mentioned earlier, the black bean and spinach burrito. That's pretty straightforward. So you need to kind of understand what are some of the basic ingredients that give flavor. This is the first layer, so to speak. Well, the fat you're going to use, whether it's butter or olive oil or salt pork or whatever. And then there's the aromatics that are going to increase the next level. And those aromatics might be, in this particular case, onion, garlic, a chili. Then you get the more substantial things, the vegetables or the meat. Now, in this particular case, there is no meat, but there's spinach and black beans. Now, you might have the next layer of flavor, and that could be spices, but it doesn't have to be. And so in that particular case, it's cumin, salt, paprika, and pepper. Then the final layer of flavor that enhances the dish as a whole that makes it greater than its parts is the garnish. In this particular case, it's cream cheese, cilantro, avocado, and sour cream. So all of a sudden, you got the whole thing. How do you eat it? Well, in this particular case, you eat it in a burrito. And there you go. You have your dinner in your hand.
And you know what? That is probably going to be the first dish that I try out of your cookbook. It looks great.
It's a good dish. Although, you know, when I spoke to your producer a couple of days ago, she mentioned to me, you probably know it's been very cold here.
Yeah.
I laughed. And I said, yes. So who doesn't know it's very cold? First time I heard the words polar vortex used in a sentence. So she said, if you could think of, pass on some recipes that are really, warm and hearty. And I said, oh, absolutely. So I think if I were in Wisconsin at this moment, I'm actually live in Southern California where we have to deal with the freezing 60 degrees. It's almost intolerable. A bacon, cabbage, and chickpea stew is a fabulous dish. And then I kind of go around the world when it comes to these stews. So, for instance, another stew that I like quite a bit is it's a ragu, meaning it's cooked with less liquid than a stew, is a pork, pumpkin, and fennel ragu, which is perfect for this time of year. And it cooks very quickly, too. But if you want to go, one of the things I like to do in this book, and if you're into this, is to go for the longer cooking type of dishes. And these are dishes that you probably would only make on a weekend because you need the time to do it. And some examples that I like in this book are, there's a take on the Polish hunter's stew. There's a famous stew in Poland called Bigas. So, and it's quite an affair. So I've kind of reduced the big affair to something a little bit more manageable for a home here in this country. And it's a stew of bacon, onion, duck, pork, kielbasa, apples, pearl barley, dried split peas, prunes, and Madeira wine.
Oh, man.
And it's out of this world. And it's really easy. Stew pot, you soak the prunes in the Madeira, and then into this rather large flame-proof baking casserole, you melt some lard with slab bacon, onion, until it's softened. Then you remove the onion with a slotted spoon, and into that casserole goes the duck. You cook that until it's brown. Then you remove the duck, and into it goes the pork shoulder. Then you return the duck, add the sausage, the apples, the prunes, the split peas, the barley, season it with caraway, sugar, bay leaf, and allspice, some salt and pepper, and bring it to a boil, and then you don't do anything for 6 hours.
Oh.
You let it simmer on a very low heat using a heat diffuser, and this is something that could also go into a slow cooker, too.
Mm-hmm.
And six hours later, stovetop, you've got one heck of a great stew.
Oh, man. It sounds wonderful. I've got lots of questions for you, but Chris in Adams County has a comment or question. Chris, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. You're making me hungry.
Yes.
It's getting to be that time of the day. I have just a comment about the joys of fond and how to get your pot clean without very much effort, which is this. I'm a gourmet cook. I was a table captain at the Pfister Hotel for 5 years, and they taught me how to cook. This is Julia Child 101, and if you want to read a good cookbook, you go pick that one up. When you saute your whatever protein it is, it can be tofu for that matter, in some good oil, olive oil, sunflower seed oil, walnut oil, something like that. You take the protein out, and you turn the heat up. And you add a cup of wine. Doesn't make any difference what kind of wine it is. It should be picked according to whatever kind of protein you have. And the wine will cook that wonderful sticky goo off the bottom of your pot, which is called the fond. And the next time I see an American cook dump that stuff down the drain or dump it out into the garbage, I'm going to slap them. But it is the best part of the meal because all of the flavor is in that stuff. And then you put your stuff back in and you continue with your process. And when you're done, all the sticky goo is off the bottom of your pot.
Ah,
Absolutely. And that is one of the great secrets not known by those who don't cook frequently, but very well known by those of us who do cook. And it really is, it's an idea of reduction in the beginnings of sauces. In fact, that's what fond means. It's a foundation to everything else you're going to do. And it's heartbreaking. I once had a cooking assistant throw that away at a cooking class I was teaching. No, they didn't arrest me after I strangled him and said, you were perfectly within your right to do so. So, but that is one of those, we talked about it earlier, the idea of layering of flavors. That is one of those layers of flavor that makes a final dish so delicious. And you can deglaze, another word to use when you do that kind of process of removing the bits that are stuck to the bottom of the pan when you add liquid to it, is deglazing. And then once you reduce the, or evaporate some of the liquid, which is called reducing, that becomes the foundation to whatever else you're going to do next.
Ah, it's wonderful. Thank you so much for that call. Appreciate it. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give us your experiences or ask your cooking questions as well. Larry Mueller here with my guest Clifford Wright, author of 14 cookbooks, including the one we're visiting with him about today. It's titled One Pot Wonders. Again, Larry Mueller here, our on-air producer, Carl Christensen, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Here's a look at what's coming up this afternoon here on the Ideas Network. At 12:30 on Chapter a Day, Jim Fleming reads from The Beautiful Mystery by Louise Penny. After 1 on The Kathleen Dunn Show, what's going on with all this extreme weather we've been having lately? Kathleen and her guests look for answers in the melting Arctic and the polar vortex. And stay with us later this afternoon after 3 for Central Time with Rob Ferret and Veronica Rickert.
We talk about issues in the news and topics that improve the quality of our lives.
The weird thing is, I was arrested not by a Capitol police officer, not by a state police officer, but by a DNR warden who looked like he wasn't old enough to shave.
I don't smoke rocks, and that's the truth.
Sometimes the most memorable toys are the ones that we didn't get.
Add your voice to the mix of lively guests with different perspectives.
The Joy Cardine Show, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from contributing members. Listener support makes up the single largest part of our budget, and it's why WPR is such a valuable source for high-quality news, talk, and entertainment programs. Thank you. Support also comes from Sprint Print, serving Dane County businesses since 1987, with full-service printing, including large-format signs, banners, and more. Details and information at sprintprint.com.
Having some great fun today talking with Clifford Wright, the author of One Pot Wonders, great cookbook. Here's how you can cook a complete dinner, essentially, in one pot and only use one pot and come out with something that is absolutely wonderful. Great to have him along. And if you would like to join in with your questions or comments, I'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Daniel has posted a wonderful photo on my Facebook page, Clifford. It's a one-pot feast that brought in the new year for them. Our grocery store ships in live lobsters. Each New Year's Eve, it's turned into a 10-year tradition for them. They cook these vegetables seasoned with Old Bay, and among other things, and they steam the lobsters on top of the at the last 10 minutes of the cooking of the vegetables, and it's a wonderful-looking pot.
It sounds fantastic, especially lobster. Where can you go wrong with that?
Yeah, it's wonderful. It looks just absolutely wonderful, and I can see why it's become a tradition for the last 10 years. John in Richland Center. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I recommend chicken on the spit. What you do is you cut a 2-inch maple, mm-hmm. and in your you know, you ram it through the chicken, and you put it on the spit, and you have the fire going. And when the legs fall off of that chicken, you know it's done.
Well, then it would be done. Clifford?
There's probably nothing more delicious than a spit-roasted anything. You know, it's a fantastic way of cooking food. The best Thanksgiving turkey I ever had was about 10 years ago. It was a spit-roasted turkey, and it was fabulous and succulent with crispy skin. Now, you can't stuff it because it's just too big and heavy. But it really didn't matter. And you do need, though, this spit-roasting rotisserie attachment for your grill. They're usually electric. If you were to do it by hand, as I once had to do it because my electric rotisserie broke, that's a bit of work, and you're going to feel very medieval doing it.
Thanks again for calling. Donna in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi. Donna, are you there?
Oh, I'm here. I was waiting to listen to me talk.
Oh, there you go.
I heard him say about the recipe for the bacon, cabbage, and chickpeas, mm-hmm. I believe. And I'm wondering how to do it. I have all those ingredients in the house right now, and I want to make it. Wow. I want to start it right away.
It's really pretty easy. You'll need... I like using dried chickpeas that I soak in water and then cook. But you can use cooked chickpeas from a can as well.
Uh-huh.
So, and you need a stew pot to do this. Now, in the book,
top
of every recipe, I've got a little illustration of the vessel you use. So, in this case, it's a stew pot. And into the stew pot goes the chickpeas, two cups of dried chickpeas, one large onion that's chopped, three garlic cloves, 3 tablespoons of olive oil, 1 teaspoon of ground cumin, some salt, and you cook that for 2 hours.
Mm.
And then you reduce the heat to medium and add 1/2 pound of either Irish or Canadian bacon that's diced. And you can use ham, too. If you were to use regular American bacon, it'll be a little bit fatty, but that's okay if you don't mind. Then you cook until the chickpeas are softened, about another hour. Then you add a small head of green cabbage, chopped, and cook that for an hour, and you are done and can eat.
Wow.
Well, I guess I'll have it for dinner.
That sounds like a plan. Sounds like a plan, Donna. Thank you for calling. Oh, man. Dolores in Kenosha. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, I love your last recipe. Well, I called to contribute a recipe.
Mm-hmm.
I call it Soup of the Americas, based on a list that, the Frugal Gourmet had a book called He Cooks American, and listed all these foods that came from the Americas. The soup base is, which I do in a crock pot, a can, one of those big fat cans, a can of pumpkin, a can of diced tomato with the juices, and not the fine dice, the big dice, because you want to see the pieces in there. And then I take one of the cans and I fill it with broth. And I usually use chicken broth, but you can make this a vegan recipe by using vegetable broth. Put that in the crock pot, and beyond that, you're going for flavor and color. I always put in a rinsed can of black beans, a rinsed can of corn, although you could use frozen corn if you got that. I always have little pepper rings that I either get the little peppers or I grow them in my garden.
Mm-hmm.
And I always have bags of those. Throw those in, whatever else you want to throw in. The only seasoning I put in there is adobo, which I get from Penzi's, and it's salt-free, but you can get it at any good Mexican store, you know.
Yep.
And since everything pretty much is cooked, you're just keeping it hot till everybody's ready to eat. And if you make up some good rice, put a scoop of that in a bowl, you got a complete protein there for the vegans. And I do have some relatives who are vegans, and they love it. The kids love it because
It sounds like succotash.
Huh?
Huh?
That's a very old recipe in New England, certainly, and it has those same ingredients. Some people who add meat to it will add a little pieces of salt pork or pork, but you certainly don't need to. And as you said, it's just really heating it, and it is delicious. I have a succotash recipe in one of my other books, not this book, but it certainly qualifies as a one pot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I'm getting your book.
There you go.
Exciting.
Ah, thanks, Dolores. Thank you very much for calling. Debbie in Wausau, let's turn to you next. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, good morning, or afternoon almost. I have a question about what type of pot you like best. Like, is it, porcelain or what would you recommend?
Well, it's going to depend on what you're making. It's very much going to depend on that because you use different vessels for different purposes. But if I had to say, what do I use as an all-purpose vessel, it's probably my Le Creuset enameled cast iron flame-proof casserole. I use that more than anything else, and for a number of reasons. One, it's very heavy, and it does very well with stews. It has a very heavy lid, which I like for a variety of purposes. And because it's enameled, it's very easy to clean afterwards. So I would say that every kitchen should have at least one of those, and then everything else is sort of optional.
Hmm.
Great. Well, thank you. I have one of those, so I'm happy to know that.
go to
thank
it.
Thank you very much.
All right. We appreciate your call, Debbie. Thank you very much for calling. You know, crockpots have come up a couple times, but you really don't typically, you haven't listed a crockpot in your book, I don't think.
No. Now, let's be clear. A crockpot is nothing but an electric stew pot. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything. All it does is heat. So you turn it on, and that's it. And you turn it on for however long you need to have it on. Now, what the crock pot does, the reason the crock pot was invented was because the very low simmer control built as part of stoves from the 30s and 40s and 50s disappeared. So people couldn't keep their pots on their stoves at the low setting because even the low setting was too high. There was no simmer control. A simmer control means it's so low that you can keep a pot on your stove of stew and let it be there for 9 hours with nothing burning. And that was impossible, so they invented the crock pot. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, they're reintroducing simmer controls to many stovetops, which will eventually make the crock pot obsolete.
Yeah.
So since that's all it does is stew very low heat.
Could do that with other things.
I just use my stove. I have a crock pot, and I use it occasionally, but it's not necessary.
Ah. Clifford Wright is our guest today, the author of 14 cookbooks, including the one we're talking about today, One Pot Wonders. He's lots of great recipes in that book. He's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. So we'll take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with Clifford Wright. Well, cooking can be a lot of fun, can it? We get to combine fresh and tasty ingredients into delicious meals to enjoy yourself or to share with your loved ones. But that fun can turn sour when there's a whole sink full of pots and pans to clean up afterwards. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. We're getting some great tips for wonderful meals that only end up with one dirty pot to clean. Clifford Wright is the author of 14 cookbooks, including his latest. It's called One Pot Wonders. And his articles on food and cuisine have appeared in places like Gourmet and Bon Appetit and Food and Wine and other magazines. He's the winner of the James Beard KitchenAid Cookbook of the Year 2000, winner of the Beard Award for the Best Writing on Food. Clifford Wright, thanks again for spending time with us today. Really appreciate it.
Certainly, I'm enjoying it.
It's a lot of fun. And our listeners, you may have a question. Maybe you have a favorite one-pot recipe. I'd love to hear about that. Maybe you've got some particular ingredients that you would like to sort of feature and wonder about how they can be done, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mealer Show, and we'd love to hear from you. And Clifford has very kindly provided us with three of his recipes from the book. One is wine-braised beef short ribs with mushrooms. Another is black bean and spinach burritos. And the third is turkey vindaloo. And I just got a post on Facebook today from Kristen, who says, "I'm making the turkey vindaloo today."
Sounds delicious.
All right. So she's getting started on the recipe right from your book, from our Facebook page. Are there certain types of ingredients that do best in these types of one pot recipes?
No, not really. And the very simple reason is the idea is versatility. Everything has to be versatile. So the only constraint, and it's not a constraint, of course, it's a benefit, is the fact that you're using one vessel. But anything can go into it, virtually anything. The only tricky thing, and it's hardly tricky, it just means you have to pay a little bit of attention, is that you are, in fact, only using one pot. So you need to make sure everything happens properly, but that's all following a recipe is all about anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike in Mazamani has a question. Hi, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Hi, guys. Great show. When I'm cooking like a chicken breast or white meat like that, I've started brining my stuff to give it a little more flavor. I wonder if you guys could speak to whether or not you do brine stuff and your recipe for a brine.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got a good story. Brining became quite popular about 10 years ago, and it was promoted by a lot of chefs and food writers and so forth. So one year I decided I was going to brine my turkey, and I bought all the proper bag. You need a pretty big bag to brine a 20-pound turkey. So I threw into it some water and salt and apple cider and a few other things. And I roast this turkey, and nobody said anything about it. No one said, "Oh, this is so much better," or, "Oh, my goodness, what did you do to this turkey?" Everyone reacted the way they always do to the roast turkeys that we have, which everyone loves, but no one commented on it. I said, "Forget it. I'm not going to bother with that step anymore." Look, I think it's a very personal thing. There are some people who swear by it, and others, like myself, who just think it's a lot of hype about nothing. I think the best way to get better flavor is buy better ingredients to begin with. So if I want a good-tasting chicken, I hate to say it, but I never buy one at a supermarket. I don't like their chickens. They taste industrial to me. So I buy free-range organic chickens, and I'll often go to my local farmer's market to get it. So I think it's the quality of the ingredients that are going to make the difference.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Mike.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Let's turn to Ann. And by the way, you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Next, we turn to Ann in Madison. Hi, Ann.
Oh, hi. I have a recipe for ratatouille. It was given to me years ago by a French family friend who had grown up in Marseille, and I can read it really quick. It's very quick.
Mm-hmm.
It's garlic, onion, and parsley, olive oil, two eggplants, two zucchinis, two green peppers, one can of tomatoes, or say a pound to a pound and a half of cherry tomatoes maybe, and sweet basil. And the directions are: chop garlic, onion, and parsley and brown in oil. Cut all vegetables, no need to peel them, and simmer for an hour or so in their own juice. Then add tomatoes, sprinkle with salt, pepper, and sweet basil. If it's too watery, cook it down with lid off. And I'm reading from her recipe that she wrote down for me, and it's almost foolproof, and it's very simple. It doesn't have anything like cheese or carrots or extra ingredients. The basic ingredients are tomatoes, eggplants, zucchinis, and green peppers, garlic, parsley, onion, and sweet basil.
Oh.
Yeah, ratatouille is a classic Provençal dish, and especially made during the summertime.
Yeah.
The other nice thing about ratatouille is that you can make a ton of it, and it's often eaten, and people say you should eat it, in fact, at room temperature. So it can last for a week. It's a wonderful thing to have in your refrigerator or pantry, especially towards the end of summer when all those vegetables you mentioned are at the height of their season.
Yeah. Sounds wonderful. Thank you, Ann.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. And again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you've got an interesting recipe to talk about or a question about preparing certain foods. Love to hear from you. You use a fish poacher, I believe.
Yes. A fish poacher is, they were invented for poaching whole fish. Well, nowadays, you'll hardly ever find a whole fish, but that doesn't mean you don't have to use your fish poacher. You can still put in fish steaks into a fish poacher. I think it's a wonderful device to have, but let's be honest, it's something of a luxury given how little fish Americans eat, and even less in the form of a whole fish. But should you have a whole fish, it's terrific because it has a little stand that you lay the fish on, and you throw some vegetables that flavors the poaching water, and you lower the fish into the fish poacher and just let it go. And it's in essence, it is a one-pot vessel that you can use to cook both the fish and the vegetables that you're putting in there.
Mm. And it sounds wonderful, and we have a state full of fishermen, and so I think it could come into play here in Wisconsin for sure.
Very much so. I mean, you've got some great lake fish that would be well-suited to a fish poacher.
We have more callers online, so let's go back to the phones. Bill in Sun Prairie, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hey, hi. Good show.
Thank you.
Just wanted to share a recipe. It's something my mother did on wash days on Mondays. She would throw first of all, I guess you would start out using a cast iron pot and make your cornbread, take it out of the pot, put in, she used a ham bone, but nowadays you'd probably use pork hocks, smoked pork hocks, pinto beans and onions, throw that in the pot with some water, let it simmer till the beans are soft, put the beans over cornbread, and you got a meal, and it's best served with something like cottage cheese or something like that.
Mmm.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, thanks, Bill.
Old Southern recipe that's really great, and it's easy as pie.
Easier than pie.
You're right.
As a matter of fact, pies are more work than that.
Yeah, easy as beans, I suppose.
Yeah, easy as beans might be the way to put it. Oh, man. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
Lima beans for the pinto beans.
Ah, limas? Sure, why not?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Laura in Superior next. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I am doing water fast right now, so this program is especially intriguing. Yeah, and I wanted to just comment. I'm a vegetarian, and I do a lot of one-pot preparations. And I guess one of the things that I've been impressed is that a lot of times some of the vegetables that we don't think of to use in the way that some of my recipes have encouraged are really, really interesting. And one is using fennel in a fish soup. Another is using lentils with rhubarb in a one-pot dish and serving it over rice. And, of course, these have spices and other ingredients. And another one I have is for quinoa and butter beans, but you also add sweet potatoes and butternut squash, cranberries, and spices. And so there's lots of things that I think combine really well.
Hmm.
That's very true, and we often are constrained by our imagination only. I've got some vegetarian dinner recipes in the book. One, for example, is mixing lentils and spinach, ginger, and tamarind with some chilies and cilantro. That's a delicious dish. And then another one is a very simple vegetable stew with the small white onions, not pearl onions, the ones that are a little bit bigger, tomatoes, potatoes, green beans, and then you can throw in other stuff if you want, like a fennel. What's nice about fennel as a vegetable is it's got a very distinctive flavor and acts both as a vegetable and as an herb, in a sense, especially if you use the leaves.
Yeah, that makes that makes sense. I think the leading producer of cranberries in the world, here in Wisconsin. I think we
did not know that.
Yeah, we beat out Massachusetts here a few years back, and so we produce more cranberries here than anywhere else in the world. I was trying to remember if there's a cranberry involved in any of your recipes.
Actually, there is. I've got a pot roast with cranberries, and I'll tell you exactly how it came about. Every year, I buy a bag of cranberries too much at Thanksgiving. So the week after, I've got that bag of cranberries, and for some reason, I don't know why it is, we only eat cranberries at Thanksgiving. It's kind of ridiculous. We should be able to eat it all year round. We drink it all year round. Why don't we eat it all year round? So I used it in a pot roast with a 2.5-pound beef bottom round that I floured, and then fried it in some vegetable oil. And now this is cooked in a flame-proof enameled cast iron pot, like the one I mentioned earlier. And then into it goes the cranberries, a little bit of sugar, some beef broth, cloves, and cinnamon stick. Now, it sounds as if it's going to be sweet, but it's not. With all that long cooking, so 2.5 hours, low simmer, and then you add whole onions, carrots, and turnips, and cook for another hour with a little bit of lemon juice, and you've got this wonderful pot roast with cranberries that is not sweet and, in fact, is a bit tangy.
Boy, that sounds good.
That's a good one.
I wonder if you could sell another vegetable we produce a lot of here in Wisconsin, at least in central Wisconsin, is the rutabaga.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if a rutabaga could go in place of a turnip.
Absolutely. You know, rutabagas are a perfect root vegetable for stews. It is just begging to go into a stew, and in all kinds of stews. And they're hearty. They're tough. You can use them, and they have this wonderful flavor. And of course, they're very similar to turnips. So an example is a beef brisket with onions and root vegetables. One of the root vegetables would be the rutabaga, along with some small red carrots, parsnip, and small red potatoes, carrots, and parsnips. And that's a terrific dish.
Oh, boy, I tell you what, I am really getting hungry.
We're all going to head to the kitchen after this show, I have a feeling.
That is for sure. You know, I like that one pot doesn't mean just soups or stews. I mean, but those are great. But you have some stir fry recipes that are cool as well. What are some favorite stir fry recipes?
Yeah, the wonderful thing about stir fries is you kind of almost forget that a stir fry can be about more than just Chinese food or Japanese food. You can really stir-fry anything. So one example is this mixed meat stir-fry that I like to do with salmon, ham, eggs, and vegetables. And this particular dish is beautiful to look at. It's delicious. But you do have to be a little careful. It's somewhat tricky because you don't want to overcook anything, and
yeah.
you're cooking it all in this one wok, so you got to pay attention. So you start off with making a little sauce of a tablespoon of soy sauce, and then rice wine, a little bit of ginger, a little bit of chopped scallions and salt, and then you let some snow peas and ham marinate in that. Then in another bowl, you make another marinade of soy sauce, rice wine, ginger, scallions, some rice vinegar, and some cornstarch. Now you start the heating of the wok, and into it goes the ham and the snow peas, and you toss several times. Then you add the salmon and the soy ginger mix, and then you push the food up to the sides of the wok so you have a clear space in the center, and you add about a half a tablespoon of oil into that empty spot in the middle of the wok, and you crack some four large eggs right in the center, and you slowly break the yolks and mix with the whites so they're distinct. They're not scrambled. You cook for 2 minutes until they're congealed. Then once the eggs are no longer gooey, you toss it with all the other food that's already in there on the side of the wok, and boom, 1 minute later, you've got dinner. You serve it on top of some shredded lettuce. Delicious.
Oh, it sounds great. Oh, man.
There's a lot of things like that. You know, it's interesting, though. When I was doing the wok, I kept trying to think of, well, it doesn't always have to be Chinese, but you know what? You just end up doing Chinese style. You just...
Yeah,
it's something about the wok that just begs to get soy sauce into it, which is fine. It's delicious food.
Jeanette on Facebook wondered if you could recommend substitutes for cheese and mushrooms. She says, I can't stand them. I have to avoid recipes that call for these ingredients, alas.
Yeah, with cheese, there is no substitute for cheese, so I would just say leave it out.
Yeah.
No harm in doing that. As far as mushroom goes, once again, I wouldn't worry about substitutes. I would just leave it out and increase the other food that is being asked for in the recipe. You know, people, when they cook and there's an ingredient they don't like, they often look for substitutes without remembering that very often you don't have to add it. Sometimes the best substitute is nothing.
I think you're absolutely right. Ben says he loves, this was on Facebook too, he loves the one pot recipes. He uses a crock pot a lot. He actually makes bread in a crock pot.
Uh-huh.
And I've done that too, and it turns out quite well.
That's an interesting use. I'm not sure if the manufacturer has instructions for that, so that's kind of interesting.
There's actually a little insert that you can buy, or you can use
it tells you how to do it.
Yeah, use a 2-pound coffee can or whatever, and you wind up with a round. Typically, you wind up with a round loaf.
Yeah,
and you don't, and there's not any. Typically, there's not any kneading involved. It's a matter of mixing and putting the ingredients together and putting them in the crock pot. And then the problem with it is I make a pineapple upside down cake in it as well. And the problem is that it smells so good that when you take it out, you have to eat it right away. And you eat the whole thing.
How painful that must be. It sounds wonderful.
Oh my goodness. Well, are there, you know, you probably get asked this all the time. Is there a single recipe that you most enjoy doing in the one pot fashion?
You know, there's two approaches to that question. One is, what is the absolute easiest thing when I'm tired? And the other is, what is a lot of work but a delicious result?
So
it's like two different directions. And the easiest is the stew pot. You throw everything in it. You turn it on. You turn it off 4 hours later, and there it is. And you don't do any preparation. You literally take the ingredients and put them into the stew pot. Then the other approach is where you're maybe making some fancy cassoulet or some pot-au-feu, and it requires a variety of different kinds of preparations and ingredients and so forth. And I usually reserve that for a weekend day when I know I'm going to spend the whole day inside and that there will be people coming over to eat dinner later on.
Yeah, yeah. Cassoulet, oh my goodness. My mother made my mother made the best cassoulet in the world, and I miss her, and I miss her cassoulet as well.
Yeah, that cassoulet is something else for anyone who's ever had it.
Oh, Clifford.
You'll never forget it.
Oh, it's wonderful. And your book is wonderful. Thank you so much for spending all this time with us today. I really appreciate it. I hope we have a chance to visit again.
Well, my pleasure. Looking forward to it.
Clifford Wright is our guest. He is the author of 14 books, cookbooks. His latest three are One Pot Wonders, which is what we talked about today, another titled Hot and Cheesy, and the third, The Best Soups in the World. And his articles published in Gourmet and Bon Appetit and other places, James Beard Award winner. He's just a fun guy to talk to, and I'm really looking forward to trying his. I'm going to try the black bean and spinach burritos next. That's on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can try it, too. Tomorrow, Dan Marr joins us for another edition of Garden Talk. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.